Hello, and welcome to the Oddness Moving Bookcast. This is a podcast about anything and everything to do with books. It is an extension of my blog, The Oddness of Moving Things, at jeffwhaley.com. I hope you'll visit me there after you listen. This episode of the Oddness Moving Bookcast is going to focus on the Sochi Olympics and how they are basically now the embodiment of Patricia Neal Warren's The Frontrunner. This is a book that was published back in the 1970s, and I will talk more about that in the second portion of this show. I am going to apologize in advance if I get really loud because it's a very touchy subject, and I hope you enjoy what I have to say. So let's jump right in. What is going on in Russia at the moment? First, I'm just going to say that a lot of my news is taken from various major news outlets, CNN, BBC. I also read a couple of LGBT blogs like Tal Road and Bitch Blogs, and so a lot of my news and my information is taken from there. And so, you know, of course it is skewed, it's much more of a liberal leaning, but I just wanted to put that out there so that you know where I'm getting this from. I have very little knowledge of Russia. I've read a couple of Russian books, which I was not impressed with. They were long and pontifical, but what I do know from Russia generally has to do with human rights and what's been going on over there with the new Putin, I guess the renewal of the Putin regime. So I think what I'm going to start is this. I'm going to go all the way back to 2012 with what was going on with the Pussy Riot trials. In 2012, five members of the group Pussy Riot, and there's another group that I can't remember the name, were protesting toplessly in a Russian Orthodox church. They did no damage to the church. They were just in there singing the song, and the church, the institution of the church, demanded that they be arrested and that blasphemy be outlawed against the church. So, like, you know, not a good sign. They're setting up, you know, and Putin and I cannot for the life of me remember who the prime minister is, but those, you know, the Duma of Russia, they basically were like, okay, we agree, we're going to do this. Arrests were made. Some of the women were held for over 3 months without any charges. Eventually, they were charged with premeditated hooliganism performed by an organized group of people motivated by religious hatred or hostility. Two had charges dismissed against them. Three of them faced 2 years in a penal colony. And yeah, so it's gone downhill from there. There have been all sorts of other protests. And then most recently, in the last really 3 months, 3 to 5 months, we've seen a return in Russia of anti-LGBT legislation. Like, this is legislation that makes the Section 28 in the UK look like a slap on the wrist. You know, Section 28 in the UK, it basically said a local authority shall not intentionally promote homosexuality or publish material with the intention of promoting homosexuality or promote the teaching in any maintained school of the acceptability of homosexuality as a pretended family relationship. So what Section 28 was doing, it was saying the government cannot say homosexuality is okay. It cannot teach that, you know, LGBT parents are just the same as heterosexual parents. But what this Russian law has done is it has banned propaganda of non-traditional sexual relations among minors. So this is from anyone, from an individual to an organization, TV shows, the news. You know, there's no way that you can now say anything about a non-traditional relationship without somehow getting into trouble. What's interesting is that it criminalizes public expressions of support for non-traditional relationships. The big problem at the moment is what is defined as non-traditional relationships. And I was reading an article, I believe it was on either The Atlantic or maybe Slate, about the woman who wrote these laws and how she has become so hyper-focused on oral sex or fellatio. She's become so hyper-focused on this that she wants that to be the defining illegal act. And it's just been, it's been terrifying what's been going on over there. And, you know, the first people that were actually arrested or detained and charged were four Dutch citizens. They were filming a documentary on LGBT Russians. They were detained, fined, and then deported from the country. But what's interesting and what will come up in the last part of this podcast is the Olympics and everything that is swirling around, you know, the myriad human rights violations. So it's not just what's going on against LGBT individuals, but journalists are also facing a lot of censure. There are migrant workers. So the same thing that happened in China, migrant workers who build the stadiums and help set everything up are, they're facing huge human rights violations. So, there's all of this other stuff swirling around in Russia that needs to be sorted out. So what's most heart-wrenching to me, and what is, the worst part about this law is what's happening to the young gay men in Russia right now. There's a couple of groups that originally were founded to target pedophiles online, and so they're trying to like meet them and capture them and snare them. But what it has now turned into is that these groups are now targeting young gay men, and they get them to meet in public, and then they are humiliating them in online and forcing them to come out to their parents, and like they're basically destroying these young men's lives. There have been at least two murders that I'm aware of, and at least one suicide. It's just this horrible thing, and if you Google it, the pictures are not, they're not okay. They're these horrible instances of the abuse, and it's really disturbing, and that's sort of why I felt that it was important to talk about this in addition to how it connects to the Olympics and what's going on, what happened in this book that was written almost 40 years ago. So I'm going to talk about the book next, and I'm going to start this section by saying if you haven't read The Front Runner by Patricia Neal Warren, you really should read it. It's this beautiful story about a coach, Harlan Brown, who is basically running away from his past. It was discovered that he's gay, and he worked for one of the large universities, Penn State. And when it was found out that he was gay, a track and field runner decided that, oh, well, the coach isn't going to sleep with me. I'm going to spread these rumors. And so he then had to leave that school, and he went to New York for a little bit and hustled and lived the gay life in New York, but in a very sort of down low sort of way. And then he got the opportunity to coach at a small college in New York. And at this college, after a little while, things were going well. He wasn't bursting any bubbles, he wasn't challenging anything, he was just sort of doing his job and building a program. And then all of a sudden, three runners from one of the big schools out in the West Coast appear on his doorstep, and they're like, we heard you're the one to come to, we want to run. They were also kicked off of their team for being gay. Two of them were caught having sex in the shower or something awkward, and the third one was insinuated, and so they left. And then it just sort of keeps going, and it turns into this absolutely beautiful love story. And I just want to say, after this, you probably shouldn't listen because there will be spoilers in the next portion. And so, as the story goes along, you have Harlan falling in love with Billy Sieve, who is this brilliant runner. He's an Olympic prospect. There's a lot of tension. Harlan, who's the coach, refuses to acknowledge it, and then so of course he treats Billy, who's the runner, really badly, and like it just doesn't end well. And Billy plateaus; he's not able to do what he wants to do. And then there's the scene where they go to New York, and all of a sudden they're like, "Oh, we're madly in love," and it's the montage scene where they both realize that, oh, it's okay, it's gonna be okay. They then become a couple, and then Billy starts improving, and he starts doing great things, and the book just sort of keeps going from that point. What's interesting to note, and what I'll talk about in the last section, is how this ties in to what's going on in Sochi. Patricia Neal Warren was so meticulous in her research on the various athletic federations, and that's really what is interesting about what's going on in Sochi and what Patricia Neal Warren was writing about back in the 1970s when she wrote this. And I think it's fascinating because it's been 40 years. 2014 is the 40th anniversary of this book's publication, and these same arguments are still going on today. So I'll talk about that next. The way the book ends is the three gay runners and Harlan, they end up going to Europe after there's a lot of negotiations with the athletics federations, and they're not going to let them, but then they say they will let them if they, as long as they're not doing political things, that sort of stuff. And they go, and Billy shows off how amazing he is, and he becomes this basically this international track superstar. And meanwhile, Harlan and Billy have some sort of commitment ceremony, like a marriage ceremony, and with their friends and family. And then it gets to the Olympics. Billy doesn't qualify at first, but then I can't remember exactly what happens, but something happens, and he qualifies for one event, and another event he actually does qualify for. without any issues. This is the part you really don't want to hear if you're going to read the book, but he makes it to the Olympics, and there's all sorts of added security because there have been death threats. He's on the cover of a magazine pretty much equal to The Advocate, so, you know, like, he's out there. People know who he is. He's this big gay runner. I believe at this point the wedding story has also broken. Harlan and Billy have, you know, given the photos and stuff to these people. So at the event, Billy's already won one gold medal. He is getting ready to win a second gold medal, and I believe the longer of the two events, he is shot by a sniper from the stands. I was bawling my eyes out at this point, reading this on public transportation, super awkward, and he's shot dead as he's nearing breaking the world record. He's going to set, you know, an Olympic record, a personal record. He's the front runner. It worked for him this time. The guy he's been competing with is unable to keep up with him, and he's shot. And it, you know, it's gay panic, that sort of thing. The guy who shot him, you know, said, "I was in love with him, but I couldn't have him, so I didn't want anyone to have him." And the story just sort of ends with that. Harlan, it doesn't end with that. There's a little bit of extra stuff, and I think it's sort of just so that she could create the second two novels in the series. But, you know, it was an incredibly emotional and a profoundly impactful story. The writing wasn't that great, but I'm a story person, so I was able to overlook a lot of that. And so that's pretty much the gist of the story. And in the next section, I'll discuss sort of why this book is still pertinent today when it's been nearly 40 years, and sort of how the Olympic movement hasn't changed, and why Sochi is both a good and a bad thing for the Olympic movement and the LGBT rights movement. So you've had to wait almost 12 minutes, and I'm sure you're now wondering, what in the world could I possibly talk about? Well, I'm going to talk about what the Olympic Committee is saying right now is the exact same thing that the Olympic Committee and the International Athletics Association was saying in Patricia Nell Warren's book written over 40 years ago. I find this fascinating. I mean, yes, I understand part of the Olympic Charter is these are non-political, politics are not involved, you're not allowed to make political statements. It is ridiculous. You know, the one, I don't know if they're comparable, but the two things that immediately came up to mind when all of this happened and when the first talks about whether or not people would be boycotting were the Jesse Owens Olympics in Germany when Hitler was in power, and then the 1968, the human rights, quote-unquote, Black Power salute at the track and field events. You know, they're all parallel to each other, and, you know, it's like how much has not changed in the front runner. Patricia Nell Warren describes the International Athletics, the Track and Field Athletics Association, as an old white boys club, and pretty much all of these are old white boys clubs, so you can't really get out of them. But what is most interesting is what the Olympic people are saying. You know, they can't get their act together, and Russia can't get its act together. Russia keeps flip-flopping on whether or not the laws will be actually reinforced. They recently just said they will be reinforced. There will be no protests allowed leading up to, before, or after the Olympic. Journalists are now wondering if they're going to be okay if they're LGBT or if their partners come with them. There's no Pride House. You know, there's all of this. There's actually a really hilarious image of where the journalists will be staying at the Sochi Olympics. It looks like a giant rainbow. The IOC released a statement, it must have been 2 or 3 weeks ago now, and it says the IOC takes all necessary steps in order to ensure the fullest coverage by the different media and the widest possible audience in the world of the Olympic Games. So, you know, they're trying to say, okay, well, LGBT journalists should be okay. What about LGBT athletes? You know, all this stuff, and it's just going on and on and on. The International Association of Athletics Federations, so this is right now the World Championship in track and field is happening right now in Russia, and so, you know, There have been a couple of protests. A runner, I believe, from Sweden painted her fingernails as a rainbow. She received some censure, so she had to paint them red. One of the American track and field runners who won, I believe it was either silver or gold, dedicated his medal to all of his LGBT friends. So, you know, there are people speaking out against this. You know, the International Association of Athletics president, the current president, said, "I don't feel there is a problem whatsoever. There is a law that exists. It has to be respected. We are here for the world championships and have no problem whatsoever. And I'm not worried at all." You could have taken this exact quote from Patricia Nell Warren's books. So, you know, yes, LGBT rights are progressing incredibly fast, especially in the United States, but then when you have old boys clubs like the International Association of Athletics Federations, like Congress, like the Senate, like churches, you know, any old established organizational hierarchy that is an old white boys club, there is going to be slow change. I mean, you do have more and more out athletes. Look at Robbie Rogers playing in the MLS. You've got Jason Collins in the NBA. You've got, you know, quite a few female LGBT athletes. But the organizations themselves, the infrastructure, are not changing as fast as what is changing on the ground. And I think this is fascinating. I don't think a boycott is the right answer. Personally, I think these athletes spend their entire lives working to get to this point, to compete on this level, and it happens once every 4 years, and you know, if you miss it this time, you might not be able to do it next time. So I don't think a boycott is the correct thing to do. I do think there should be some sort of sign of civil disobedience. I keep reading these articles about what would happen if, as the athletes walked out in the Parade of Countries, Parade of Nations, if an athlete took out a little tiny rainbow flag and then other athletes did it and then they all did it. You know, I think those are much more pertinent than an actual boycott. You know, doing something small that's civilly disobedient, I can see where that would have so much more of an effect, because at that point you are on a world stage. In addition to this, what I find fascinating is the number of LGBT activists and liberal activists who are like, "Oh my god, I can't believe the Olympic Committee does this. I can't believe the IOC is saying this, or the International Athletic Association of Federations is saying this." And it hasn't changed. You know, definitely look into your progressive rights. Look at what's been happening over the last 20 years, over the last 40 years. I mean, if you go all the way back to the 68 Olympics, those two American athletes who raised their fists, their medals were not removed, but they were removed from the compounds and they were not allowed to finish out the rest of the Olympics. I think they had finished all of their events, but they did have to leave because of this overtly political statement. So, you know, this is nothing new. It is nothing that has changed. It is something that should be talked about. It is something that should be discussed by all means, but it should be discussed in a full light, and I think that it should also incorporate all of these other things that are going on in Russia. You know, the human rights abuses against migrant workers, against just the general population. There are so many issues that should be discussed. So yeah, hopefully you enjoyed this podcast. I think the week after next, it'll probably be something Jane Austen related. But I will let you know. Thanks again for listening, and hopefully I will have another podcast up within the next month.